Okay, welcome back, guys, to your A-List Lowdown for June 10th, 2025. Coming at you with straight, safe street candy and permitless foreigners, and a few other things.
Oh, man, you know what I forgot to look up? Was the No Kings protest? Was it, I think there was a one in Toronto. And I was going to, you know, say, well, how can they have one in Toronto? We have a king. I mean, the king just came here. What do you mean, no kings? Canada has a king.
Oh, are they doing that here? This isn't part of the LA burden, though. This is a different.
Yeah, no, it's, well, it's kind of an ad. I think it's part of a spinoff. It's by the same organizer, probably a spinoff.
It's a spinoff.
Spinoff.
That's this weekend, though, so it shouldn't affect our trip to America.
Depends on how long it burns for, I guess. I mean, it's all over the state, so we'll see.
Well, we're in red states, so, right? So we should be okay.
I don't know. I mean, I think we're in some.
I'm flying to Tennessee.
Yeah, that would be. But what are some of what's it called when they flip back and forth again?
A swing state? Is North Carolina a swing state?
I think it's a swing state. Yeah.
I could see that. They got like Charlotte, you know, Charlotte and Asheville.
I think the roots go back. They're pretty red, pretty freedom orientated. But, you know, these days, all the cities turn blue.
I'm looking forward to that little trip to the States.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm not yet. I get excited as it comes closer.
You know, in some ways, that just gets a drag to leave the farm now.
I know.
It's like I got my fishing day and I got stuff. So it gets to be a pain to leave the ranch. But once I get going and get there, then I just have a blast. And then
You get kind of in a routine when you're doing the daily work and stuff. And you know,
a week's about right, though. You know, after a week, I'm usually
ready to come home.
Ready to come home. Yeah. I mean, I'm planning a trip for July now, too. So it'll be another week, or in August, another week. So, and then probably go down to the local park here for a week in July.
I want to do a local, like go down to the local park here too. Yeah.
And camp?
There's a big lake. Like, well, I mean, I don't know about camp, but I don't think they have those. What I'd like to do is rent those things they have in Alberta where they rent like a physical tent. Like it's not really a tent, but it's like a
inflatable ones now, dude. They look all right. I mean, I haven't got one yet because I'm pretty hard on stuff. You know what I mean? Like if my tent's got to be able to go out into the back country and stand up with a bunch of dudes hunting. But yeah, exactly. For like you and the wife, just going camping down at the lake, I think they got one that you just blow up and it just like. Tuk, 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 tuk,
tuk. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Well, they have those ones in Alberta where it's like a hardcore tent, right? Like it's almost like a cabin. But it's right there in the parking lot and you can rent those out for, I mean, it's probably fairly expensive. It's probably like a hotel room, but at least you're in the campsite out in nature on the river or the lake. So maybe I should check to see if they have those in Saskatchewan because she'll need something comfortable.
Or go on like RV Easy.
RV Easy.
You got the cheap and you could just rent a cheap little, I mean, it's just you two. You could get something. I was just looking today at campers to rent for five of us. But I got a big truck, but with your little Jeep, you could pull a little something for you and Maria. No problem. It would even have a little bathroom in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the kids love the beach here. So there's a couple places where you can go camp and go fishing for a few days. And now it's always so packed, but now I got the freedom to just go during the week. We'll just go from like Monday to Friday.
Right.
Sunday to Thursday, probably, you know, when it's not busy and come home Friday.
Yeah.
And it's only like an hour away, so I can just rip home to do the shows that I need to do. And
oh, yeah, yeah. You could, all right, they could even just stay there and you could come home for a couple hours. Yeah, my dad used to do that when we'd go camping to Cultus Lake and he'd do like a huge commute from Chilliwack all the way to Richmond, I think. He would commute for a bit.
That's an hour and a half to here and I could come because we got animals that need checking on too, so it's just good to get back a couple times anyway if we're going to go for...
That's a great idea.
Easy to go.
Why not, right? Set up like camp there for a bit and then just come back and forth this way instead of doing the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the girls and Shauna get to spend more time just out in nature and just hanging out without worrying about, oh, we're going home tomorrow already. Like, you know, they kind of settle in a little bit, you know?
yeah, five days is a good settling. You get time to get the stuff out. Otherwise, you're just like getting cooking stuff out, and you're already, it's time to start packing it up.
But why not do it for like a couple weeks then?
I just don't know where. Well, first of all, the kids are week and week.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right.
And I could, that's kind of changeable. I think we could probably figure something out in August. But then I got to save some time because I'm taking them to the Azores. So that's going to chew up like that extra, because everyone gets one, each parent gets one extra trip a year, you know, type thing. And now it's going to be like, now I'm going to go home this summer too. So I guess it's not home anymore, but I'm going to go back and see some people. Anyway, we should probably get to it. It's already 5 minutes in. What do you got? Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first? Why don't I start with this? I mean, poor Pierre's been out of the thing. He lost not only the prime ministership, he also lost his own riding, so he's not even in parliament. He's technically just unemployed right now. He's an unemployed bum. But he's also the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, which I guess is a job. That probably comes with a salary, I'm sure. But this is, where is it? Why is it not shown? Oh, this is it here. This is just him talking about the Auditor General's report. This, of course, is going to go in and talk about the people that kind of screwed us, that have all been now promoted in Mark Carney's government. But somehow things do actually seem to be trending in the right direction. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. What's trending in the right direction?
Well, we're meeting our NATO commitment this year all of a sudden.
Well, that's nothing. They just have to transfer some money in the computer. I know, but
no one could do it. No one could just do that. I mean, this guy's almost, when he said elbows up, he must have meant knees down.
I don't get it.
Like he's kneeling for Trump.
Oh, kneeling that way, yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine if you'd have told Trump at the beginning of this year that Canada wouldn't take, because I think one was saying 10 years and the other party was saying 5 years. And this guy here, the conservatives was 5 years, which was half the liberal time of 10 years. And then Carney's doing it in 6 months. Crazy. I mean, I'm not saying that I agree with all of it, but it's from the conservative voters' viewpoint. It's like he's beating Pierre's platform now.
Yeah, exactly. Is that the 2% or 5%?
The 2% for now.
Yeah.
But I mean, between that, you took all the tariffs off the states. I mean, could you bend over any harder?
Yeah.
That's harder than Pierre was going to bend over.
So now who's responsible? Well, Public Safety Minister LeBlanc was at the time, the minister who helped get these contracts out. Now he's been promoted in the Liberal government. You've got Patty Hajdu, who was the health minister that kicked off the Arrive Can app. She as well has been promoted. And then you've got...
You heard about what happened with the Arrive Can, right?
Some kind of 7-year suspend. What, yeah, 7 years? What?
7-year ban from government contracts.
Oh, wow.
Doesn't sound like anybody's going to jail for all that stolen money, though. And they can't even produce any intellectual property. It's like
I can't even blame them. I mean, honestly, it's the government's fault. They should be the ones, the people that administered it.
They're unable to prove they did any work at all.
Got F-35s. Liberal mismanagement of the process has now driven up costs by 50% or $9 billion. The infrastructure delays are going to mean we need two.
Did you hear about that one? The F-35s went from, they went up, Trudeau canceled Harper's deal and then they redid it for like an extra $5 billion a plane.
$5 billion a plane?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think
it was. F-35 is that boondoggle from the States though, right? I mean, apparently that never worked out really good.
They're buying 88 of them. We're buying 88 of them.
Wow. For $5 billion each a plane?
I don't know who's going to fly them. Yeah,
that can't be per plane. $5,000 per plane?
That's probably not right. That's high.
Yeah.
Two fighter squadrons. slated for completion in 2031, more than 3 years late, forcing extra spending on interim facilities. They haven't recruited enough pilots to fill the gap. They've got weak project management, risk management, and coordination plans remain incomplete and slow. And the bottom line is that rising costs, construction delays, staffing gaps, weak oversight threaten the ongoing introduction of the fighter jets. And who is responsible for that? Well, Anita Nan.
So get this, Harper in 2008, I think, because I think it was Chrétien that originally got the ball going. So in 2008, we would start talking about buying these planes, and we might get them 13 years later.
No, not 13, dude. No. Seven. No, it's got to be.
Well, they're saying 2031.
Yeah, but from 2008 to, it's 17 years ago.
No, you're right. Sorry.
So 17 plus six. So 23 years later.
20, a quarter of a decade. Like, it's amazing that we're still even using the same technology.
And was one of the defense ministers who helped bring about this boondoggle. She has been
promoted. He called it a boondoggle too.
So in all of these cases, you have promotions for those who caused the problem. Now, finally, you've got federal land for housing. In the middle of the worst housing crisis in the world, the government has failed to live up to its promise to sell off federal land and buildings for housing. They said in 2017, half of their buildings and land were underused or vacant, and yet only 2% of it has been disposed of for homes. They've built only 309 homes, 90% short of the 4,000 they promised. It takes them 8 years to sell a property. 8 years. You've got $3.9 billion we could be bringing in over the next decade if we sold off these buildings and avoided having the operational costs of them. And the fact that they've missed these targets means that there are countless young people who can't afford homes, single mothers who pay higher rent, seniors choosing between eating and heating because the cost of housing is out of control. Again, the housing minister who caused this disaster has now been promoted to Liberal Minister of Justice. So it is the same Liberal ministers, the same Liberal gang, making the same Liberal mistakes that cost Canadians a fortune.
How do you just go from justice to housing? Like, is there just no in this thing whatsoever? There's no,
Mr. Ohio, you're
not bringing anything to the table. You're not bringing any of your personal experience into this government role. You're nothing. Just nothing. It's not, yeah, he didn't work on housing. Let's try him in justice.
Yeah, that is pretty weird. That seems to be Canadian unique.
It should be a fucking lawyer in the justice thing, you know what I mean? Or some, an old judge or something like that.
But tell me, is it a hierarchy of these things? Like, is it a promotion if you move from one to the other? Why are they like rated differently depending on the budget, depending on the people that are under the
wage? Probably, yeah. I think justice is definitely higher than housing. Seems like one of the top three, you know?
I said this. Somebody was getting grilled about street candy too. That's where my thing comes from. My title. Would that be justice or was that safety? That might be the safety guy. So safety and justice are different, I guess, right?
God love all these YouTubers, but I hate how they won't say certain words. I mean, you can't bend to the algos that much.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Oh my God, I don't have my clip for my, I don't have the clip for my title.
You fucked it up. Okay, well, anyway, I'll go here. Here's one from my chief. My chief. So this is Chief Merle Loon.
Nishnawabi?
I text him. He never texts me back, this guy. Anyway, statement of the chief of Mishkigogaming Ojibwe Nation. June 4th, 2025.
Hang on. Before you start, what's the one on top? Nishnabi? Aski Nation?
Aski Nation.
What is that compared to the Mishkigogame? Like, what? How does that? How does this infrastructure work? Not infrastructure. How does it work?
I'm not sure.
Is that the higher level one? And then the Mishnogami is within that one? Probably, right?
Yeah, I would say, yeah. Or that's just, but I don't, anyway, I'm going to read it.
Okay.
I make this statement as the chief of Mishkigogaming Ojibwe Nation, Mon, On behalf of the membership of my nation, nobody asked me, our nation is located at the gateway to the north. Our traditional territory is rich in mineral resources and is the gateway for accessing Ontario's critical minerals. We have a long history of engaging with industry and government regarding the development of these resources. As chief, I am compelled to state that Mon shares the concerns of other First Nations in the province about the opposition to end opposition to Bill 5. The Protect Ontario by Unleashing Our Economy Act 2025 in its current form, Bill 5 threatens to fundamentally impact our Aboriginal and treaty rights by taking away protections which we rely on when considering whether to provide our consent for new development impacting our nation. Mon is open to responsible development. We work frequently with proponents in our traditional territory. We are negotiating and have reached dozens of mutually beneficial agreements which allow for natural resource developments to proceed with certainty alongside safeguards that the environmental integrity of our traditional territory will be maintained. This requires both individual agreements with proponents and strong regulatory framework to protect the environment, archaeology, and species at risk. This strong framework will be upended by Bill 5, the imposition of special economic zones. I mean, that just sounds dystopian, doesn't it?
Special Economic Zone 3.
Where this is where they could shoot you. And the proposed changes to the Ontario Heritage Act and the changes to the Endangered Species Act threaten to reduce consultation, which is already not happening, while also giving a green light to developers to destroy sites which are important to our culture and the species with whom we have a strong reciprocal relationship. I want to be very clear, absent legislative protection, we will defend our land. Bill 5, ooh, some OCA shit. I could get into that. I'll go home for that. Bill 5 will not make resource projects move faster. It will create adversarial relationships between First Nations, proponents, and the Crown. If Ontario is interested in speeding up development, introducing regulatory confusion, and inviting litigation based on the protection of our rights is the wrong way to go. Bill 5 fosters an environmental conducive to conflict. Environment conducive to conflict. Ontario should instead be laser focused on fostering environments conducive to consent, replicating what they have done so successfully in the renewable electricity generation and transmission sectors. Indeed, we have seen both renewables and electricity transmission development that creating regulatory environments conducive to consent, this says AI all over it, is the fastest path forward to seeing new projects proceed. The Wet'suwet'en Transmission Project, a project with deep respect for First Nation protocols and environmental integrity, runs directly through our territory adjacent to our reserve. Mishkigogami is a proud partner. It is these opportunities that are before Ontario now, and they must not be squandered. But Bill 5 and the type of development it seeks to foster will only lead to adversarial engagement, lengthy court challenges, and a stagnant investment climate. This is not what Ontario needs right now. Mon wishes to encourage responsible development. We are also willing to take any necessary steps to protect our lands and our constitutionally protected rights. It is us and the lands and natural resources in our traditional territory who will ultimately bear the brunt of irresponsible and uncontrolled development. We agree with the Chiefs of Ontario that Bill 5 must be repealed. And Ontario must consult with First Nations, including Mishkigogami, before proposing replacement legislation. Chief Merloon.
So what's your thought of that then? Like, what's your sort of...
I haven't read the bill, to be honest. It's I'm in Alberta. It's in Ontario. So I don't even really weigh in too much on banned issues because I don't feel like I really have a place. I don't have a connection to my band. I don't. It's a band in Canada, but I just stay out of the local politics, except for I did send them my open letter.
But what's your sense of like, what came to mind was that this is going to stall any kind of progress and it might be on purpose. I'm not blaming the bands or anything like that, but like, you know, this is sort of, it sounds like it's not going to help things moving forward.
It's just this is more of the same. It's the same old problem that we're going to keep having until we figure out the Indian Act. we got to figure it out. We got to negotiate an end to that, whatever that, you know, there's going to be, I don't know, whether it's land or money or whatever, I don't know. But if we just keep ignoring it, then these are the sorts of problems. We're just, it's just giant gray areas now that end up in courts of law. And like he's saying, take fucking decades to figure out, because there's no, it's time to get some clear lines. This is your territory. Here's the border. And you guys can do what you want on there, and we can do what we want over here.
Right, right. You can drill, baby, drill on your land, because it's
yeah. There. I guess the concern is that because I mean we are talking about the fucking Wild West in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? There is a concern that when you get out there it could get a little wild.
You know, what do you mean?
In Alberta, they take pretty good care when they're putting in roads and doing stuff like that. They do. The resource sector in Alberta does a great job of coming in, doing what they got to do, leaving and not trashing the place. And a lot of people probably disagree with me on that. But I mean, where I'm hunting and where I'm outside, where they've been, it's usually not that bad. I'm sure there's examples where it didn't turn out like that. But for the most part, you know, they run a pretty clean operation. I would even extend that out to when I'm out in the mountains going down the logging roads and stuff like that. They run a pretty clean operation.
Yeah. Compared to like
you go down there and if the
work being in place, or
even if they have the machines there, they'll have stuff blocking the creek to make sure if the oil pan goes on the machine, it doesn't go in the creek. So I don't know, because you get back in there, man, there's nobody there. I mean, we're talking like miles north of my hometown.
Right. Right.
So you could literally just do whatever you want and nobody's really going to notice for a little while, plus where there's a history of those reserves getting fucking flooded out because of dams and stuff like that. So it's an adversarial relationship already. It's just time to draw some lines.
And I agree. I agree. 100%. Especially now with everything going on in the world. I mean, these lines should have been drawn a long time ago, so we could have been, you know, extracting resources in a fairly safe and healthy way, you know, and
yeah, and that way Indians can decide if you want to go, go. If not, well, these your neighbors do. So we're gonna go over there now. See you later.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you want to go now? Actually, let me go one more time, and I'll set you up with this. This goes back to your hometown. Not your hometown, sorry, your home province. You were kind of talking last week about the 111
fires. Yeah.
Were human caused in Manitoba, and 5 were under investigation.
Yeah.
And 6 were natural causes, which I guess those are the ones they're saying are climate change. Saskatchewan Premier says 2 people charged for setting wildfires. So this would be outside of human cause. This is criminally caused.
Well, it's within human cause. It's just another.
It would be in the same, different category, subcategory.
Do you have a clip for this?
Well, it's only 15 seconds long, so I'm just going to read it. Or actually, this is the ad. So
yeah, I got a 28-second clip of it if you want.
Let's see if it's just the one ad. God damn it. Google should play these people so that I don't have to watch ads. Know what I mean? Okay, yeah. I'll play the clip. Ready?
Yeah.
Good evening. We begin tonight with the latest on the wildfire situation. As of 11 o'clock this morning, the SPSA says there are currently 24 active fires burning in Saskatchewan. 6 are not contained. That brings the total number burning this year to 247. That is well ahead of the 5-year average of 139. As the fires burn, more than 30 communities have been told to evacuate, and up to 15,000 people remain forced from their homes. As the fires burn, we're learning tonight that 2 people have been charged with intentionally setting fires in the province's north. It comes as Saskatchewan's largest fire is expected to reach Candle Lake within days. Jasmine Pelche has the latest.
As wildfires rage amidst a fire ban, RCMP revealing two individuals have been charged with arson as flames continue to cause significant damage to communities in northern Saskatchewan.
The RCMP have informed us that they have now charged a couple of individuals, one with respect to some fires that were being started in the Smeaton Snowden area, and another individual that started the fire that originated out of Weaquin, which is known as the Ditch Fire.
Police say an 18-year-old woman was arrested after setting a fire off Highway 696. That was reported to Waska Sioux RCMP on May 30th. She was charged with arson. On June 3rd, Nipawin RCMP arrested a 36-year-old man for setting fires in a ditch near Highway 55. RCMP say checking into the circumstances of reports of arson will take time. Meanwhile, Saskatchewan RCMP has charged two people regarding thefts reported in evacuated areas. RCMP say officers will remain in communities affected by fire until it becomes too dangerous for them to stay and are still responding to calls in affected areas. This as the flames potentially threaten another community. Brent Lutz from the resort village of Candle Lake says the giant shoe fire could hit the village in 3 to 10 days.
For those that are thinking that maybe they may stay to defend their properties, we're advising them to not do that. It's very dangerous. Once the mandatory evacuation has been issued, it means it's no longer safe for them to be in the community.
And there isn't much help coming from the weather. While the north will see some rain this weekend, it is difficult to say how much this will impact fire conditions going into the next week.
We're seeing, you know, rainfall this weekend, but some windy weather too, so that also can have an impact and help things to spread. But with the rain,
everyone's at home. You notice that? None of these people are back to work.
That's a positive. But then when we're looking into next week, it looks like some more heat moving into the province.
I say this from home.
Temperatures back up towards the high 20s.
Jasmine Palaszczuk, CTV News, Prince Albert.
Okay, did they leave out conveniently this CTV that Premier Mo confirms that virtually all the fires in Saskatchewan are human caused and some intentionally? Did they say it like that?
No, can you follow it up?
Yeah, sure.
I'll follow up for us.
Yeah, I mean, I can. Yeah. This is from Melissa. There's some kind of disturbing comments. People are, you know, thinking that we're all like rage baiting about this stuff. But I mean, of course it's important because climate change has been blamed on all this. I mean, even recently.
The past week is that many, if not virtually all of the fires that we're dealing with in Saskatchewan are, although not intentionally, are human caused. And some of those have been intentionally a human cost. And there's the RCMP have informed us that they have now charged.
So you see how CTV took it right from there, right? The RCMP, right from the RCMP. They chopped off the first 15 seconds of this where he says they were virtually all human cost. I mean, really, that's all.
That's it.
Right? I mean, it's just disgusting, right? You couldn't have just said that. You couldn't have just given us a full statement of what Premier Mo said. So then there's people here saying, like this guy here, fires, this is from Canadian Prepper, fires only burn if the conditions are right. It is only that these human-caused fires can spread and burn for a variety of novel, anomalous, climactic reasons. It's hotter, drier, more erratic wind patterns and jet stream, and there's a lot of dead standing timber from invasive species. And lastly, fire suppression, which hasn't allowed parts to burn, which should have, i.e. forest mismanagement. 20 years ago, these fires wouldn't have been able to endure as long. There is no narrative, only retards and science. So, there is a narrative, you jackass. I mean, that's the whole point. I'm going to reply to that guy. Anyways. You know what I mean? Canadian Prepper, you know they're blaming climate change. Of course there's a narrative. What is he talking about?
They're always blaming climate change. Well, maybe, yeah.
And this is the thing that you were talking about last week, I think, right? We'll see what this is. We lived it before, and we are not going to stay silent. Now, like, I don't know about this, but this is from the Buck You Will. Would you look at this, taken from Facebook by Tasha Tuesday. Fire, Bill 5. We just heard that, Bill 5, didn't we? Was that what your guys were talking about?
Yeah, that's
and the resource grab on treaty land. Look closely at these two maps. Now, I want you to see this. See if you agree. One shows wildfires sweeping across Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, many marked out of control. So she's saying, look closely at the two maps below. The other shows mineral deposits, lithium, cobalt, potash, nickel, uranium, most of them untouched because they sit on treaty land. I've circled the overlaps. There are many. Now, here's what's happening. Fires are burning directly over mineral-rich, treaty-protected territory. Indigenous communities.
This is the one I was telling you about last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Indigenous communities are being evacuated, some permanently. Bill 5 makes it easier to remove anyone seen as unauthorized on public land, even if it's their own ancestral territory. And now, Indigenous people who've offered to help fight the fires, knowledge keepers, trained firefighters, and defenders are being denied access to help protect their own lands. This isn't just mismanagement. It's a strategic erasure. Displace the people, criminalize their return, keep them out while the fires rage, then extract what's underneath. They call it a wildfire crisis. But it looks a lot more like resource clearing. And while they talk about green energy and critical minerals, they won't even let the indigenous firefighters protect their land, their homes, or their medicines. We see what this is. We've lived it before, and we are not going to stay silent now. So there's the overlaps. So I don't know what you think about that. I mean, I guess it does seem a bit odd, really. I don't think I've seen it this spread out like this before. Last year, the year before.
Yeah, I don't know.
Seems like a bit of a deep conspiracy.
Seems like a bit of a stretch yet.
Even for me. If I'm not buying your conspiracy theory.
You're in trouble. But that could just be your systematic racism.
Yeah, you missed Ontario. They're here too. Major one in Sudbury. That's from the White Wabbit Warrior. Nickel. Wanapate First Nation. Wouldn't be the first time. Here's another one. Must be coincidence. The number of devastating fires which took place across Canada over the past decade fall perfectly in line with these exploration processes.
Nice.
So here's this firebug that got caught, apparently. That did. Oh, that's the Wyakin one that Professor Mo, Premier Mo talked about. The ditch fire, the Wyakin ditch fire.
Busted. What's Mario saying?
I just want to relentless. 100% of the wildfires were caught relentlessly pursue the truth, regardless of how uncomfortable it is. So it was to my surprise when I saw this. There was a fact check against me by AFP. Again, all I did was read the information that was on Manitoba's website that talked about the fact that 99 out of the 109 fires that are happening right now were caused by humans. This is directly from the AFP website, Big Cross. My caption was, climate change spotted pouring gas in Manitoba. Because despite everything we've been told for quite some time now, this is the truth of the matter today. And there can be no revisionist history. The point that climate change was the result of these uncontrollable fires that we are currently dealing with today. Before it was published in the news, and Juno News was one of the first to actually report this, where mainstream media completely avoids this type of title or narrative, even though it is true. I had found this earlier than anyone else because I went on the Manitoba website related to fires. While I broke this news first, AFP wants to say that human-caused Manitoba wildfire data is being misused to downplay climate impact. Well, the numbers speak for themselves.
Unbelievable.
99 divided by 109 is just over 90%. 90% of the wildfires were caused by humans, and as it was reported to me in confidence, several of them were Indigenous people who did so because there's disputes internally. Do you think the news will cover that?
All right.
I'm going to burn this motherfucker down.
That's good, though. That's a little good little climate change segment. I mean, sorry, wildfire segment. It's pretty smoky here today, to be honest with you.
Here, too. It's smoky on the lake. Well, let's jump over to Table Salt, see if you heard about this. And this is my permitless foreigners that I brought up. The title, March 4th, 2025, in the final days of the Trudeau government, Mark Miller, then Minister of Immigration, quietly signed an order making it easier for employers to hire temporary foreign workers already in Canada without needing a permit effective after the election. So here's a highlight a bit here from the background. Temporary foreign workers fill important labor and skills gaps in all sectors of the Canadian economy. Blah, blah, blah. Workers in these situations have to apply for a new work permit and have to wait for the work permit to be fully processed before starting a new job. This could mean a delay of several weeks and result in a prolonged break in employment for the worker and a frustrating wait for employers who sought to hire amongst the temporary foreign workers already in Canada. Here's the effective date and expiration. This public policy takes effect 12 weeks after it's signed.
So, do you have any examples of that? Like what it's supposed to be? Like who would be affected by that?
I don't know. Let's read this one. Public policy considerations. Aligned with the government's goal to reduce the inflow of new temporary workers in Canada, it is imperative to better utilize the skills and training of the temporary foreign workers already here. You know, the like 150 of them lined up at Subway for a job. As well as offer workers a viable and timely alternative to change employers if they need to do so. A timely transition to new employment is beneficial to both employers and workers alike. The employer is able to hire the worker who is already in Canada and have them stuff. Why not? There's no mention of hiring Canadians. Yeah. A timely who's already in Canada, have them start work quickly, and the worker can remain financially stable without a prolonged break in employment. Therefore, the objectives of this public policy is to allow temporary foreign workers already in Canada who are changing jobs or employers who now have secured a job offer under the same terms of either the Temporary Foreign Worker Program or International Mobility Program to more quickly begin work in advance of a final decision on the work permit application. So just assume it's going to be fine. Because it's your second one, I guess. Therefore, I hereby establish that, pursuant to my authority under Section 25.2 of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, there are sufficient public policy considerations that justify the granting of exemptions from the requirements of the Act and the Immigration and Refugee Protection Regulations listed below to foreign nationals who meet the conditions set out below. Individuals expected to benefit from these measures include foreign nationals who, one, are on maintained status and are authorized to work while their permit application is pending, but who are bound to the conditions imposed on their expired work permit such that they cannot move to a new occupation or employer. Two, continue to hold a valid work permit that limits them to working for a named employer, but need to transition to a different occupation or employer for reasons that may include having been laid off, or three, are work permit exempt, but require a work permit to work in a new occupation or for a new employer.
Huh. So, I mean, I can kind of build on that if you're done.
I'm done.
This is Jasmine Lane. I kind of clipped her thing because it's infuriating. You're going to lose your mind over this. So I have a couple questions for you, but she talks about the 10,000, which doesn't seem like a lot as a percentage of the foreign students, the temporary students that were brought in. Like it was like fraud the way they were brought in, you know? So she starts off with that. She ends with that, but then she gets into some other stuff about how come the Liberals can't answer how many people have gone back home.
Also, according to the Economic Times here, the IRCC flagged over 10,000 student acceptance letters that were potentially fraudulent in 2024. A total of 500,000 applications were reviewed, with 93% of the letters that were verified as genuine, 2% deemed fraudulent, and 1% associated with canceled student admissions. And this is also interesting because it's the exploitation of international students, not at all by Canada, but we have Jenny Kwan, who's an immigration critic for Canada's New Democratic Party, called the revelations extremely alarming and urged the government to address both fraudulent actors and potential complicity by educational institutions, saying, and I quote, "Canada has a responsibility to ensure that international students who have been defrauded are protected. This might be unpopular or very popular, and I say this with all due respect to people who have had their lives totally upended by having to go through something like this, where you essentially give everything that you have. In some cases, I was reading stories of people who sold their house just to pay for this fake admission, to pay for this fake immigration that they didn't know was fake. So I certainly have a lot of compassion and sympathy for them there. But at the end of the day, it's not the government's responsibility to make sure that you're taken care of if something turns out to be a scam, because there's a very easy way to ensure that things are real, and that is to go through the official channels, not somebody who contacted you on Facebook Messenger saying that they can help you.
There's a lot to unpack here. There are 500,000 people as of December that should have been removed from Canada. How many were removed?
The Honourable Minister.
So thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You need to contextualize the numbers when we present them in this House. There's facts.
You know, you still have time, Minister. You have a few seconds.
You see that? I mean, is this real? Are they clipping these? Have you noticed? Have you seen any of these clips in the last couple of days?
Yes, I have.
They look like they're like strung together or edited almost weirdly. Like, or is it just the way it happens that they happen to be all like, really going about their question period? Does it seem weird to you?
I think it seems like the normal shit show.
I feel like these are all added together or something. Because look at this house.
People cut out the so if this is someone producing it, then they might have just cut out all the bull crap in between to actually.
Oh, this is from Table Salt.
Actually get to the speaking, so it just cuts out all the blah 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 blah.
Maybe that's what it is. It's like YouTube jump cuts kind of thing, right? So look at her reaction.
Sometimes the speaker's saying some stuff, or who knows what's going on. You know,
look at the reaction here.
That should have been removed from Canada. How many were removed?
The Honourable Minister.
So, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You need to contextualize the numbers when we present them in this House. There's facts.
You know, you still have time, Minister. You have a few seconds.
Mr. Chair, appreciate that. CBSA and Public Safety Minister, he was here, I believe, Thursday, and he's in charge.
How many of the 500,000 people that are not supposed to be in Canada have been removed? Just the number.
Minister.
So thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Again, people whose visas expires or who are here that should not be here need to leave. If they do not, that is a CBSA.
Remember,
have you heard her before at all?
No.
This is just infuriating. They shouldn't even be allowed to thank the minister. Like, they're just wasting time.
But here's the thing. The minister cannot set levels if she doesn't know how many people have left. So it is her job. So I need to know how many people of that 500,000 has left. How about this? Does she even know? Does she have any clue?
Minister.
So, again, Mr. Chair, my role here tonight is not to talk about people leaving and people that are here that have visas expired and so on. In terms of how many have left, that is completely a CBSA function, and the public safety takes care of it.
The Honourable Member.
Canadians literally pay her $100,000 top-up and give her a car to know these numbers. How many of the 500,000 people that were supposed to leave in December actually left? This is pretty simple. Like, how many? Does she know?
I won't make you listen to the rest of that, but just so you know, she still did not answer the question. And it makes you wonder, is it that she doesn't know the answer, in which case she absolutely should not have that portfolio? Or is it that she knows the answer and it's higher and she doesn't want people to know, so she's trying to evade it? Of course.
Why would she say it? Why would she evade it if it was higher? You know?
Or lower?
Or lower, I mean, to me. But I mean, it's just infuriating. You go through all that. And why was that? Is that just, it must be just a committee with nobody in there? Like it's an empty chamber almost. They're just going over that stuff. But it's just infuriating that they don't have to answer any questions. They can just ramble on and I don't know. It just gets annoying.
Ramble on, brother.
Well, do you want me to go on and do my headline thing then? Or?
Let's do the headline.
Oh, boy. So this is going to be interesting because we do have some new MPs, right? Like Aaron Gunn. He did some of these.
Bexty. My guy's pretty good.
And Bexty, right? So because he's Aaron Gunn did those documentaries on the downtown east side, right? And what was happening in Vancouver. Canada's Liberal minister, and this is from Aaron Gunn himself on X here, public safety, completely unaware that his own government decriminalized hard drugs, including fentanyl, crystal meth, and crack cocaine in BC. Also doesn't think someone high on crystal meth poses a risk to public safety. So here, I'll just play a little bit.
I'm a member. Mr. Chair, does the Minister of Public Safety believe the Liberal government's experiment to decriminalize hard drugs, including fentanyl, crack cocaine, and crystal meth, has been a success in my home province of British Columbia?
Yeah, I'm a minister.
Mr. Speaker, that is factually incorrect. This government decriminalized cannabis and did not go beyond that.
Well, member.
What?
This is the same guy as the gun guy.
From the minister that he is saying that this government did not decriminalize fentanyl, crystal meth, and crack cocaine in my home province of British Columbia.
Yeah, well, minister.
No, Mr. Speaker. It happened as part of a request by the British Columbia government for a short period of time.
Mr. Chair, the minister must know that the policy of decriminalizing these hard drugs still exists. It's set to expire in January of 2026. Will the minister commit to ending this failed policy once and for all?
The Honourable Minister.
Mr. Speaker, we look forward to working with our provincial and territorial counterparts to ensure that there is no hard drugs available within their respective jurisdictions.
Member.
What?
Mr. Chair, under the Liberal drug decriminalization policy that actually exists right now for fentanyl, crystal meth, and crack cocaine, drug dealers are allowed to store more than 1,000 lethal doses of fentanyl in their homes. Does the minister believe that this policy makes Canadians safer?
Oh, Minister.
Mr. Speaker, this is a question that should be addressed to the Minister of Health.
The Honourable Member.
Addressed to the Minister of Health, Mr. Chair, frontline RCMP officers have told me decriminalization ties their hands behind their backs and makes it easier for drug dealers and drug traffickers to push their illegal and addictive substances. Does he not agree with these frontline RCMP officers?
The Minister.
Speaker, this is a question that should be posed to the police of jurisdiction.
Remember.
Just passing it on to the health and the police.
Ultimately, does the minister agree that this is a matter of federal jurisdiction? This is the criminal code, does he not? And ultimately, therefore, it is his government's decision and his government's responsibility.
Minister.
Mr. Speaker, this is a committee of the whole to address issues around my portfolio, which is public safety. Issues relating to health, and I suggest that this question be posed to health.
10-second question, 10-second answer.
Mr. Chair, does the minister believe that someone who's high on crystal meth wandering the streets of downtown Vancouver or Toronto poses a risk to public safety?
The Honourable Minister.
Mr. Speaker, this is something that should be addressed to the Minister of Health.
Very brief. 2 seconds.
Same question, yes or no. Someone high on crystal meth, an issue of public safety, yes or no?
Minister.
Mr. Speaker, this is a matter that should be addressed.
Oh, it's just infuriating. They won't answer. They just keep. I mean, of course they won't answer because it's a dumb question. I mean, it's just a rhetorical question. But this is just our government at work for a brief period of time.
I love rhetoric.
Going through their clown show.
Well, let me interject quick. Can I jump in quick?
Yeah, that's it. That's it for that one. I mean,
that's your highlight piece.
That's my safe street candy. I mean.
So here we got, I can follow up. I'm going to follow on to your safe street candy, but I want to follow up with this first. Gary, I like his name is Gary. Gary Anandasangari is now Carney's Public Safety Minister of Canada, Attorney General of Canada, and retains the Indigenous portfolio. Nandasangiri also served as legal counsel for the Canadian Tamil Congress. According to the government of Sri Lanka, the Canadian Tamil Congress is a front group for the terror-listed Liberation Tigers of Tamil Alan.
The Tamil Tigers, yeah.
Yet another, Arif Virani, former Attorney General of Canada, who had ties to the terrorist organization known as WSO, World Sikh Organization. The Canadian Tamil Congress denies any ties to such organizations. But given the pattern, it begs the question. Is Canada already ruled by criminal organizations linked to other countries such as China, Mexico, Iran, etc.? Mark Carney handpicked Gary Anasangri as justice minister for a reason. He's the same minister who backed Trudeau's failed, reckless, soft-on-crime laws that put violent criminals ahead of law-abiding citizens. Bill C-5, Anasangri voted to eliminate mandatory minimums. Bill C-75, he made it easier for repeat offenders to walk free on bail. The result, violent gun crimes up 116%, violent crime up 50%, hate crime up 251%. Auto thefts up 46%. And that's not even counting the churches. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of an interesting little spin.
Well, it's not even a spin. I think it's legit.
You think he's an actual terrorist?
Well, no, I think he was from the Tamil Tigers.
Oh, well, isn't that a terrorist?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know.
He's listed.
You know, he's like their lawyer guy, the cleanup guy, one of their fixers, or, you know.
It's okay to be the lawyer for the terrorists?
Well, no, I'm not saying it's okay. I just don't know if he's shooting and killing people. I mean, like, when I think of terrorists, you know, I don't think of the white-collar jobs that go along with it, you know.
Yeah, consider white-collar terrorists.
He's administering the stuff.
This is from the Bureau. A dangerous experiment, doctor says ideological Canadian governments ignored evidence as safer supply exasperated fentanyl death surge. A scathing new study by a Canadian addictions physician concludes that ideologically driven social justice governments have worsened the country's fentanyl crisis by aggressively funding and promoting so-called safer supply programs, despite a lack of evidence they save lives. Instead, as mounting proof showed that thousands of government distributed opioid tablets, as potent as heroin, were being diverted into the black market by organized crime, Health Canada, public health officials, and sympathetic media outlets continue to defend the controversial programs and attack critics. Even as violent incidents emerged, including a shooting outside a Toronto Safer Supply Clinic, the study notes that some advocates called for medical professionals to be removed from program oversight entirely. In a paper published by the McDonald Laurier Institute, Dr. Lori Regenstrife, a veteran addictions physician, argues that Canada's safe supply program, widely expanded after 2019, have not only failed to reduce overdose deaths, but have coincided with the steep rise in fatalities. The number of opioid-related deaths in Canada surged from 3,023 in 2016 to more than 7,300 by 2021, despite increased distribution of government-supplied hydromorphone tablets. Regenstrife warns that the policy, intended as harm reduction, has morphed into a dangerous social justice experiment, sidelining evidence-based treatments like methadone and buprenorphine in favor of unproven, unsupervised opioid dispensing. How Canada has chosen to address opioid overdose is unique, Regenstrife states of her findings released today. No other country in the world would envision a policy in which people with opioid addiction are simply given bottles of opioid pills with the assumption that this will solve their risk of overdose death.
We have to laugh. It's unbelievable.
Instead of curbing fatalities, safe supply programs have unleashed a wave of diversion. With powerful 8-milligram hydromorphone tablets known on the street as dillies leaking into illicit markets and being trafficked across the country. She cites a growing body of evidence also covered in reports from the Bureau that these pills are not only widely sold and traded by program participants, but also used as currency by organized crime groups. Cited in the study, like-minded addiction experts Dr. Sharon Koivu and Dr. Jenny Mullane reported that the street price of Dilaudid 8-milligram tablets collapsed from $15 to $20 in 2020 to as low as 50 cents in late 2021. Things changed within weeks of the hydromorphone hitting the streets, Mullane said. This sudden flood of pharmaceutical-grade opioids reshaped local drug economies, allowing criminal networks to exploit the government-funded supply chain and expand access to hard opioids far beyond clinical settings. Red and Strife also highlights systematic flaws in the program's implementation. Staff at supervised injection sites often appeared well-meaning, but lacked clinical experience and a clear understanding of untreated addiction behavior. They did not grasp the constant pressure felt by users to acquire more drugs, money, or other currency to maintain use. One notable case cited in the report occurred in 2023 when a peer support worker at the Parkdale Community Health Center in Toronto was implicated in a shooting incident. A peer support worker, perhaps with naive but good intentions, ended up on the wrong side of the law in attempting to protect a safe consumption site client involved in a shooting. In her conclusion, Rage and Strife warns that comparing opioids to alcohol, as some safe supply advocates do, is a false analogy. Alcohol's harms accumulate gradually. Opioids, by contrast, are acutely toxic and deadly. Canada must chart a better path forward, she urges, one that prioritizes evidence-based care, not ideological narratives. That path includes a return to opioids agonist therapy and wraparound services, genuine adherence to medical science, balancing individual and community well-being, and reuniting the four pillars of Canada's drug strategy: prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and enforcement.
Yeah, see, they're missing the treatment and the enforcement part of all that, right? I mean, this is the problem. I was going to do a one day analysis between Portugal and what they did right compared to us and what we did wrong. Like, I think we, you know, I'm not necessarily against some sort of decriminalization or legalization, but I think you have to be pretty hard on crime still. You got to have, you know, you got to be like, you can't just roam around in public doing the stuff, and you know, you can't just let criminals out right away like that. So I think we're missing half the picture. But here's a good like follow-up story here. Today, my colleagues and I came across a woman lying in a pool of her own blood at the front of a clothing shop on Toronto's Queen Street. This is from Harrison Lohman. As we assisted, and I wished I'd remembered more of the first aid class I'd taken years ago, her colleague told me she had tried to stop a man from stealing an article of clothing, only to have him smash her head into the doorframe. Multiple people walked by the scene. Some gawked. Myself, her colleague, and a passerby all tried calling 911, only to receive a busy signal. We waited 10 minutes. Nothing. At the 15-minute mark, a retired doctor, thank God, stopped to assist. By that time, the pants the piece of shit thief had tried to steal were used to try to stop the bleeding. We finally got emergency services on the line, but still no one came. This poor woman continued to bleed, was in shock, and unable to communicate. This was in downtown Toronto at 6 p.m. on a Friday, blocks away from the largest center of hospitals in Canada. We were then able to flag what appeared to be an off-duty fire truck. Firefighters assisted and contacted an ambulance themselves. Still nothing. By the 20-minute mark, I can't be exact, wasn't timing it, an ambulance finally at last arrived. How can we call Toronto a world-class city? How do we tolerate this? What the hell is going on? And here's Karen, not the Toronto that I grew up in. The thief brazenly attacks a shopkeeper, walks out, passersby gawk and walk by. 9/11, unreachable, ambulance, MIA. 10 years of liberals, now Carney lectures us on values that are not Canadian. He was gone 10 years himself. I guess this is why the LCBO advises employees to let thieves leave the merch with the merch so nobody gets hurt. What a society we live in now. That woman is traumatized for life. Maybe because half the resources are taken from three things: protests, fentanyl overdoses, gangs with illegal guns. Let's see what Trish Wood has to say. Hi, Harrison. I'm a journalist who lives in Midtown and has been noticing the devolution of this city for some time. We were without passable sidewalks for weeks because Toronto couldn't even manage snow plowing and removal. We live amidst constant construction, detritus, and noise. Traffic is now like Bangkok at various times, and everybody is angry. Social cohesion is ripping apart. Olivia Chow is inept and finds time only for her pet causes. She should be impeached. It's what a... And to think the Canadian government is trying to disarm us and make the argument that we don't need to defend ourselves, just call 911, sounds like a great plan. It's like this in every province, not enough paramedics and ambulances to respond to calls, ambulances being held up at hospitals because there's no beds to put patients on, no beds in hospitals because there's not enough nurses and doctors, too many patients, hospitals are overwhelmed. This is because people don't have family doctors, so they go to emergency rooms for things that should be treated by a GP, broken system. That's a really good point there. Canada's healthcare system is collapsing as we speak because of over and unfettered illegal immigration. This is a topic medical professionals are discussing worldwide, making Canada a pathetic laughingstock, and it is just math. Not enough Canadian students are trained in health and sciences, not enough doctors, over immigration. Wow, that's a really good point there. And then we have... Mark Carney upholding the Canadian values. Let's just share this clip from Kirk Lubimov. I don't know. You must have heard this already. You're going to laugh at this one.
We the Khalistanis thanks Mark Carney. A more of a businessman than a prime minister of Canadian. Upholding our Canadian values for giving us the six a rare opportunity to ambush Modi's political debt. We the Khalistanis.
Can you believe that? I mean, can you believe that? Really? He says,
is it real?
Well, it seems real. I mean, he said it. I don't think it's fake. The Khalistanis have lost whatever their mind. We the Khalistanis thank Mark Carney. I'm just going to retranslate here. Prime Minister of Canadian, upholding Canadian values for us, the Sikhs, a rare opportunity to ambush Modi's political debt. A foreign separatist group is threatening the leader of a country and a Canadian ally. I believe there's a word for that. Canada has become a staging ground for terrorist activities when the government notes this openly and tells Canadians all about it. Then they use this scenario to come after peaceful Canadians who point out and protest those foreign illegal terrorist activities. The Trudeau-Carney Liberal government of Canada is proud of this manifestation of cultural diversity and enrichment we've imported into Canada. Yeah, that's a good one, eh?
Good one. Should we put a button on it? Put a bell on it? Put a bow?
Yeah, I'll save the other one for in a couple days here.
Friday, maybe.
Friday, yeah. Yeah, it'll come by fast. The weeks are flying by.
Tuesday. Yeah, we're off. We'll probably no shows next week. Well, there'll be a show next Tuesday.
Yeah, maybe we'll do on Tuesday before you go.
Not Friday and not the following Tuesday.
Right.
Because you don't get back till Tuesday either, do you?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm flying Tuesday morning at like 5 a.m. or something. I just thought get out as both my flights are the first flights in the morning. So
whatever. That's 3 a.m. fucking Calgary time.
Yeah.
You have to go through Calgary?
No, I don't. I go through the States, I think. I think I go from Saskatoon directly to the States.
Ooh, so you'll do proper customs there, probably.
Yeah. Oh, where? In
the States.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, because all the airports don't have that pre-customs thing? Is that what you're saying? I'm
assuming it's just the big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's just the big ones. Yeah. So, yeah. We hope you guys enjoyed it. a-list.ca if you want to support us. Or send us a donation or anything like that to help us keep the show going. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube, you can just like, subscribe, share, comment, all that stuff that the YouTube algo likes. Help us grow the show, get to that monetization level so maybe we can start making a little bit of money. We got the super chats and stuff, but we need the next level up as the real one. So subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe. Check out grimerica.ca for other podcasts, adultbrain.ca for books and audiobooks. Contact@thecabin.com for trips and events. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Friday.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.